Radio Namaste is brought to you by your host, the blue collar goddess, Sarah Nash, and a small crew of guest personalities determined to amuse, entertain, and occasionally astonish you. And now, Radio Namaste, a different brand of enlightenment streaming live across this galaxy and probably a few more.
That we're talking about. Well, namaste and greetings, lovers. This is Sarah Nash as your host, and you're listening to Radio Namaste on the Om Times Radio Network, bringing you, as always, a very different brand of enlightenment. Hey, the first one to hit me up on our Twitter at Radio Namaste, that's, you know, the at sign Radio Namaste with an H, with the hashtag Blue Collar Goddess, gets the opportunity to be in the drawing for a free 1 hour Skype session. That's a pretty good deal. And I'm going to put all those love notes in a hat. Zen Master Ted will snag one out, and Motorized Millie will announce the winner at the end of each month when she joins me as my guest host. So hashtag that. That's hashtag Blue Collar Goddess to at Radio Namaste and get in the hat for the goods. Those are the good goods. By the way, if you're listening in live on the most advanced mobile player on the planet, you already know that you don't have to download an app to get live streaming access to this conscious community called Om Times Radio. You're going to want to check out the archives for past shows at the Om Times Podbean portal or on namaste, that's with an H, .com in the show archive section. Zen Master Ted, my co-pilot here and co-conspirator, will give you a tweet about that in a minute or two. So you want to star that and make it a favorite for easy access later. So by the way, speaking of stars and shapes that remind us why we're here on this third rock from the sun, today's show is about circles and walking in circles and sacred circles, sacred geometry and more. David Gallagher, he's our host today, or our guest. He's our host. He's going to be our host and our guest. I'm just going to walk out. He's going to handle the whole thing. Anyways, when David first walked the labyrinth in 1995, this experience changed his world in life-altering ways. And when I went to Grace Cathedral in San Francisco and walked my first labyrinth, it changed me too. And most of all, it gave me a real starting point for finding this place inside of me called the center. And for me, it's a place really, it's this ineffable reckoning and peace that was really, it's like a tangible experience. And it was unlike anything that I'd really had before that. And I'd written about it and I've talked about it, but for my guest, one aspect of this experience was knowing that he'd been called to help bring the healing potential of the labyrinth to others. And well, he's really lived that purpose through participation in the founding of the Labyrinth Society and becoming an officer and a director there. And currently as its first executive director, building an occasional labyrinth locally is still in, you know, on his radar, but his service seems really more effectively placed and enlarged as working as behind the scene helper, most directly and indirectly to those who create, maintain, and use labyrinths all around the world. And he said, the questions and the mysteries remain, the quest for answers and resolution, an eternal process. So how sweet it is. Well, it's sweeter at this moment because I have him on the air with us right now. Greetings, David.
Voila.
Voila. I remember when I first met you at the first labyrinth, the gathering, I had booked Zen Master Ted and I had sponsored, like an event or something. It was like a meet and greet and Nobody knew me and everybody was just like walking around. All of a sudden you were this magnificent human being. You just walked up and you were like, hello. And it was so theatrical and beautiful. And I've been in love with you and your beautiful family ever since.
Well, thank you very much. It's certainly reciprocated.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You are larger than life, by the way. You're one of the most brilliant people I've ever met. And again, you know, I run into these people out there who do these incredible things. And you're really humble and funny.
Well, I'm not so sure that there's anything that can be larger than life. And that's a whole other conversation.
Well, let's have a conversation. Tell us about your first time walking a labyrinth. I'm really curious.
Okay. I'm always happy to tell the story. It's told infrequently because few people ask. And the challenge here, this could easily be a two-hour monologue if all the detail be thrown into it. So the challenge is always to keep it brief.
Well, and we'll let our producers edit that, but you go right ahead.
Basically, I was in a dark period of my life, and for various reasons, which I won't get into, and went to a meeting, the Creative Problem Solving Institute at the University of Buffalo up here in northwestern corner of New York. And I came out on a midday break, lunch break kind of thing, attending a pre-gathering workshop or a pre-meeting workshop. That word gathering kind of has now worked its way into my standard vocabulary. And noticed that out on the quadrangle, there was a guy driving nails in the ground. What is this? And you could kind of see the angle of perspective was kind of low, so that you couldn't, all you could see was that there was this mess of these things in the ground, but the perspective wasn't high enough to see what it was. And so I was curious what this was about. And as I started to walk over, maybe a little amble distance of about 60, 70 feet, as I started to walk over, the guy who was working on this, doing this thing, he dropped his tools and walked off in the opposite direction. So as he walked away, I walked toward this thing. And as I got closer and closer, and the perspective then enabled me to see that there was a pattern there. And this is interesting. And so I just walked up to it and walked around it. And here I'm on this circumference that's continuous all the way around. And I come to a point where, oh, there's an opening in the circumference. So I stood there and looked into, if you will, the entrance, and could clearly see that this was something that was constituting a path. And so I just... thoughtlessly, so to speak, just wandered into it, merely being curious, and that's how it all got started.
You were invited. That sounds
like question. I was invited. I mean, once I started to see the picture, it's just kind of like being dropped in the middle of a forest, and you can see all the trees, but you can't see the forest. Mm-hmm. You have to get up above it, and metaphorically in our lives, it requires the perspective of time, which then via psychic operations or psychical operation forms memory. And that's an interesting question to pursue. What is memory? And and then that enables perspective or a point of view, which then enables you to see what you couldn't see when you didn't have the perspective to see what you needed to see.
Well, and I know exactly what you're talking about, because when I – from time to time, when I enter, I have a personal labyrinth, but different labyrinths have different feelings and different vibrations and frequencies. But I know for me, if I start walking a labyrinth and I'm thinking about my laundry, my shopping list, the conversation that I had earlier that day that was disruptive, or just whatever it is, by the time I get to the center, I've forgotten everything that I started out with, and I find a place of peace. And that seems to be kind of a remarkable and across the board sort of statement for a lot of people that have had the labyrinth experience. Now, some people don't know what labyrinths are. And because we're part of this little nepotistic crowd that's very – and the other thing is we're not very clicky too, I've noticed. It's like we all sort of just really like each other no matter where we're at. But when we talk about labyrinths, those who don't know what a labyrinth is, think of a maze. They often think of it, it's this giant – I know I did when people first started talking about labyrinths years ago. I thought it was some sort of marvelous maze with regard to, you know, entering, and it's not. It's a maze in the mind.
Well, in a way, the mind is a maze, and it's not a maze. And part of the challenge that we undertake, and this is what I believe life is all about, is to understand that the maze is illusion. Maybe I shouldn't use the word illusion. The maze is actually, I believe, the reality of our experience. But the way in which our minds work, we perceive as maze-like what is actually a unitary whole. And so it's not a problem to be solved so much as it is a mind to be realized. And that's what self-examination. The unexamined life is a wasted life.
Mm.
Well, what's being wasted? What's not being examined that causes the perception of waste? It's the mind itself, and that's what we are, mind itself. But we're not at the point where we experience mind as itself. But that requires more explication.
Well, let's talk about the two different types of labyrinths. And I know we're going to have to go to a break here pretty soon. But I know that there are – well, actually, there's quite a few different types of labyrinths. But the labyrinth, they have the – and correct me if I'm wrong, David, because I always get this backwards. But there's a labyrinth design that sort of mimics the – it looks like a brain. If you take a cross-section of a brain, what kind of labyrinth is that called? That's the classical labyrinth?
Talking about the folds of the brain?
Yeah, there's two basic types of labyrinths out there. You have the medieval, which is like the Chartres.
There's controversy around this a little bit in terms of the nomenclature. And by the way, I do not myself see myself as a labyrinth expert. When questions of a basic nature come to me, I'm happy to answer them. I feel confident answering them. But I'll assess a question as it's presented to me. I get a lot of this via email. And often, well, maybe often's not the wrong word, frequently enough, I'll refer it to someone who I feel really is an expert.
And we do have some really incredible people at the Labyrinth Society online. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
The truth is, you can't change the world if you're broke. I know. I tried. Isn't it time you turned your life's calling into a profitable, freedom-based business? I'm Michelle Barr. Join me every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern for Sacred Success.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Know what to do, just can't figure out how to fit it all into your busy life? It doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ellen Vaisberg from Seamless Life. Join me every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio and learn the how of conscious living. Let me and my guests help make your life seamless.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
I sit here and I'm swinging back and forth, the cutting edge, conscious radio. Anyways, hey, David. So I realize that you're not a labyrinth expert per se. And this also is very interesting because you don't have to be an expert to create a foundation celebrating something.
So can we cut to the heart of your question? during the break, I realized that I was going off into La La Land. And
that's beautiful because, you know, who cares? We're just having a conversation, and I love La La Land. That's a different brand of enlightenment here. You know, it's like we're not on a format, and tangents are my religion. In fact, I think I should start a new religion called Tangent. Oh, shiny. All hail, oh shiny. Here, let's talk about new religions. Let's talk about you starting this foundation called the Labyrinth Society.
Well, technically, it's not a foundation. It's a not-for-profit corporation. And it isn't an entity that has foundation status with the Internal Revenue Service. So let's just call it a not-for-profit.
Excellent. Let's call it what it is. And that's another thing I love about you, David. You're very, very, very specific. And when we have these conversations, it's stunning to see how you talk about drive a nail into the – I keep looking over here at Zen Master Ted, who's nodding. He's like, yes, I love talking to David. But let's talk about the beginning of that. So you had this experience that led you to do what? What was the next thing that happened? You said, all right, I walked this path, and then this happened.
Well, it had two ramifications. One, it left me with a ton of questions. Primarily, what made that experience possible? How could that have happened? I haven't told the backstory to that aspect of it. But I had this experience, and I would, in retrospect, refer to it as cosmic. But in the immediate moment, it was quite confusing, and I didn't understand it. So the first imperative that I seemed to be left with was, I've got to figure this out. And then the other aspect that occurred was a kind of felt imperative to learn more about what this thing was that I just walked, or what it is. Now, it turned out that the person who made that labyrinth was Joe Migas. I had never known – didn't. First time I met Joe was on that particular occasion, and that labyrinth was the first labyrinth that Joe Migas ever made. It was a temporary, and the way he did it was kind of interesting. Let's not take time with those details, but it clearly was a labyrinth. I didn't know the word well, I'd heard the word labyrinth, but I didn't have the word labyrinth identified with this thing that I had walked through. And so Joe educated me a little bit there on the spot, and I then wanted to learn more about labyrinths and what is a labyrinth.
Where was this again? You were at the.
This was at the. It's called the short. The acronym is pronounced CPSI, Creative Problem Solving Institute, CPSI.
Okay. And Joe Migas, I mean, I'm familiar, but go ahead, tell the world a little bit about Joe and what he was doing there.
Well, Joe was a longstanding attendee at this conference. It's a kind of a little family, somewhat similar to TLS's annual gathering, where there's a kind of core group of people who, over the years from coming to the gathering, they become friends and they kind of look forward each year to this family reunion. And so CPSI is somewhat similar in that respect, in that it's a kind of extended kindred group that's into creativity and problem solving. And once a year, they all get together for CPSI. And so Joe was a longstanding participant in that tradition, and that's how he was associated with it. If I did hear it from Joe, I don't remember it, the details of his first encounter with a labyrinth and how he became called to the work. So that's a part of it I can't relate.
Well, let's talk about how you were called to do it. Because again, you know, people are going to understand after listening to this conversation, people who have never heard of Labyrinths, who have just tuned in because, hey, Radio Namaste rocks. And they're going to be listening to this really intelligent individual named David Gallagher, who's been involved in obviously, I mean, it's like you were an insurance salesman, a management consultant. You taught practice management for 10 years at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Cornell. And I mean, you've spanned so many different occupations. So clearly you are intelligent, well-grounded. And would you call yourself religious or just spiritual? I mean, that little background there, and then suddenly you have this experience that has clearly made such a huge and magnificent difference in your life that you go ahead and you create this nonprofit organization dedicated to Labyrinths. So, you know, that in and of itself is a testimony to the beauty and the I'm trying to find the right word. I can't find words right now. But so let's talk about how it motivated you forward.
It being
your experience with regard to walking through the labyrinth, finding out what it was. So you found out what labyrinths were. Tell us a little bit about that journey, because that's part of the path.
All right. Well, the two paths, so to speak, the quest of understanding and then the labyrinth, if you consider them separately, they actually come together, because in the process of attempting to understand what enabled the experience that I had that was associated with that first encounter with the labyrinth, gradually merged or mixed with my quest for understanding the labyrinth itself. The two come together in a kind of nascent understanding of what life is really all about, and that is, as I understand it, and that leads to the belief in that understanding, is that it's about self-knowledge. Uh-huh. And the labyrinth, to me, is a symbol of almost, you can kind of think of it maybe as the anatomy of self-knowledge. But this is not something, my understanding as I understand what's within me in terms of that insight, so to speak, mm-hmm. is not something that's easily translated into words. It's very challenging to put the idea that's in the mind into a form that enables others to see it.
So here, let me stop you right here. You have this experience. You speak to Joe. You find out it's called a labyrinth. You go home. You tell your beautiful wife, Jane, I walked a labyrinth. Or you tell somebody, I walked a labyrinth. And then what happens next? What was the very next thing that happened? Did you have to go find more? What was the next step?
I had, after the encounter, the experience at that conference when I came home, I had ensuing pretty intense, I'll call them psychic experiences.
Uh-huh.
They really interfered with my ability to function effectively in everyday life. And I acquiesced in that state for a period of time until it became evident that somehow I had to find a way to balance the practicalities of everyday life with the peacefulness of retreat into the cave. And so you can't live in the cave. It's kind of like the yogi who retreats to the cave and in a way is self-deluded, because what they're doing is retreating from reality.
Well, and that's how my experience was. That was, for me, that was the center. So I love that we have that in common. You call it being, you know, in the cave. For me, it was being in the center, because you can't stay there. And so one of my taglines is, how do you channel Sananda and, you know, drive, you know, change a diaper? It's like, how do you find that equanimity? And I think that this is what the labyrinth does for those of us who are plagued with these psychic experiences, such as you and myself, and yet want to maintain a sense of sobriety throughout their life and still have the opportunity to experience the spiritual.
Well, I envy you your apparent confidence in understanding what the labyrinth does, because I'll confess that I don't. All I can do is recognize that it seems somehow to produce an effect which is felt as an affect, and how it does that is something I've not been able to penetrate.
Well, I can only speak for myself, David.
Of course, any of us can
do. When I say that my confidence with regard to the labyrinth, I mean, when I have yet to take a labyrinth facilitation class with the teachers. There's some incredible people out there who do labyrinth facilitation workshops and they teach how to. And again, you know, I think it's a very personal, very, very private experience that is, some people are just more adept at teaching than others, because I don't want to single any one person out because I honor them all. But, you know, it is a very personal experience. And some people walk a labyrinth and they feel nothing. And other people walk a labyrinth. Now, my guest last week, Chrism, a Kundalini master, he approached the labyrinth as though it were a Kundalini experience. It was a three-dimensional, the labyrinth was a two-dimensional experience with regard to a three-dimensional platform. Zen Master Ted, I think we have a few bits and pieces that maybe we can direct people to go back to last week's episode with Prism. But he said the labyrinth was a representation of Kundalini, of the Earth's Kundalini.
Well, I can see that, but I would enlarge that. And I agree with René Guénon, the early 20th century Roman Catholic philosopher and symbologist. He argued that the labyrinth is a symbol of the cosmos. And I don't see that as out of sync or inconsistent with what you're guest last week was saying. He was making it Earth-centered. Guénon's concept is more universal in terms. But then at the same time, when you say that you feel most happy or peaceful when you're at your center, my observation on that would be that you're never not at your center, because the center is always with you wherever you are. And it is both nowhere and everywhere. It's a point in space, but it's also all of space.
That's a good place to stop, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids.
Hi, I'm Katrina Kavanagh, host of the I Am Wisdom radio show. I Am Wisdom is about the connection between mind work and energy work, spirituality, and living a wonderful life. Looking forward to sharing each Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with you.
Host your show on IOM-FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM-FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
So, David, we were talking about centers and being at the center of the circle. And for me, I think the labyrinth is an excellent tool with regard to assisting people who might not necessarily lean towards having spiritual experiences or having metaphysical experiences. They tend to be a bit more cerebral. And this is a way to open that door to consciousness. You yourself, I'm kind of looking at it because even though I didn't know you before the Labyrinth Society gatherings, I sort of want to believe that you were this very no-nonsense kind of, you know, this is up, this is down, this is black, this is white kind of guy.
Well, appearances can be deceiving.
Well, I know we can't be off the path if we are the path. And there's all these little cliches and things that we can say. But, you know, to say that, you know, the center is inside of us all and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's really great. But the labyrinth to me is a tangible teaching tool, which is why I have one in my backyard, because people walk it and you can kind of see they get this like little gleam in their eye. They get this little tickle. Their consciousness has been tickled.
Yeah, what's causing that to happen? That's just an amazing mystery to me.
Well, again, I think Chrism really dialed it in a little bit when he said that it has something to do with tapping into the kundalini of maybe just even just, you know, since I think it was Tesla who said that the entire universe can be explained if you do it. And I say this almost every show, energy, frequency and vibration. The labyrinth is tapping into an energy and a frequency and a vibration that all of us maybe have. And you said that word. What is memory? What is memory? And maybe it taps into something inside of us that unleashes and opens that doorway, because you said that in your bio about opening doorways.
Well, when you approach a labyrinth, you step up to the entrance. But I prefer to change the emphasis in the syllabization, and you step up to the entrance.
I love that. I love it when people do word wizardry. One of my previous guests, Gloria O'Neill Savage, she was an amazing word wizard. The way that she was able to break down words and do things like that. I love when people do that. So I'm going to remember. I'm writing that down. Entrance. You are entranced. Now, growing consciousness and growing a conscious community. So you began to learn about labyrinths. You began sharing your experience with labyrinth because you needed to create some equanimity in your life. Tell us about that.
I think the first priority was to create an income in my life. Because what happened is the experience from that first encounter was so life transformative. And its concurrence with the dark midnight of the soul, which involved my appointment at the faculty at the college, my entire life direction changed. And in the changing that occurred, things that I had been doing became not exactly meaningless, but just far less important. And I wanted to do other kinds of things with my life. But if I was going to get off of one horse, I didn't have another horse to remount and continue. And so I sort of had to invent another way to keep home and hearth together. And so it evolved into the place where I am now, that the work that I do for the Labyrinth Society is compensated, so that provides a little bit of income, which in conjunction to Social Security, which I'm now receiving, enables us to stay here where we are. Anyway, so it's a kind of combination of things that kind of blend together that – anyway, so –
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. It was when Zen Master Ted moved to the Pacific Northwest, he was having his, and I'm just going to speak for him. He's sitting over here, you know, he's not inflating, he's not blowing up cactuses and throwing them around the room, so we're good. But the bottom line was that he was walking on the beach and he was picking up sea glass, and he said to himself, you know, I wish that there was some way that I could make, I wish I could make money by walking on the beach picking up on sea glass. And well, believe it or not, that is one of our most viable sources of income in this family, because it appears that out here in the Pacific Northwest, there are, you know, excellent sources of sea glass that are not available elsewhere in the world. And there are some excellent crafters and jewelry makers that have contracted with Peter for these bits and pieces of recycled glass. So not only is he picking up sea glass, but he's making a living. And it's patchwork economics when you have this sort of consciousness. So I applaud you for your ability to say, okay, I still need to eat and put bread on my table. How can I wrap up this new paradigm?
And at the same time, do what I feel that I've been called to do.
That's it right there. So you say you were called to do this. Tell us about that. What happens when you're called to do something like that? What does that feel like?
Well, Sig Lonergan, I think, probably or might call that gnowing. And so it involves gnosis. And you need to have a little bit of background in Hellenistic and Platonic theology or philosophy, ontology and cosmology, to have an understanding of what's meant by gnosis. And it basically means knowing. And it's not something like a voice speaks to you in coherent words and sentences. It's just an intuition. It's just a knowing.
Well, it's sort of like you've tapped into the intergalactic ESP channel, that it's suddenly you have mail.
let me just reframe slightly from the way to the way I see it. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much that I tapped into it as that I opened up to allow it to tap into me.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well said, sir. I honor your ability to nail that lasso and bring it back to square one, or circle one, as it may be.
Or the point.
The point.
Or center.
The center. Now, speaking of centers, so I grabbed my book here, the fifth edition, which was in September of 2011, of Labyrinth Pathways, the book, because it has a picture of the chart on the front, but it was the classical labyrinth is the one that I was referring to that kind of looks like a brain.
Yeah, and that was when I said cut to the chase of your question. Basically,
yes.
there are, I think fundamentally, my view, Jeff Sayward might have a different view, there are three types. The classical, and there's sometimes a nomenclature dispute over that, as some people insist on referring to it as the Cretan. And then,
there we go. That's
right. And then, and that's first in chronological order. Mm-hmm. The second is Roman. And the third is medieval, which people very commonly refer to as Chart. Chart is an example of a medieval type. There are many instances of the medieval type. They're not all restricted to Chart. Chart, however, historically was apparently the first instance of its appearance in a walkable form, although it appears in manuscripts, particularly in illuminations in medieval manuscripts of simply drawings on paper, whatever the material was that they were, I forget the name of it. It's not vellum. Well, anyway, that's beside the point. So there are those three types, but then there are just an infinity of variations on those types. And then there are others that don't fit into any of those three categories.
So what I mean, and again, you know, there are so many different types of people out there, and I certainly don't want to alienate or say one is better than the other, because I honor and respect them all, as I know you do too.
But I'll tell you, let me interrupt. It's my observation that something that's unique in each individual somehow produces an affinity where some people feel more drawn to and comfortable with the classical pattern, and others feel more comfortable and drawn to the medieval pattern. And I have no idea what the variable is that prompts that to occur, but to me, it's an observation that's valid.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Myself, I've looked at both of them. I've walked both different types of labyrinths, and I have to say the one that does appeal to me, and I don't know if it's like an artistic or sacred geometry type of – I want to – do you know much about sacred geometry? We really haven't had an opportunity to talk about that. But
well, I like to think that I do, but again, I would not characterize myself as an expert.
Okay. All right. Well, then good. Then we're sort of, I think, on the same – well – I don't want to put myself in the same category with your intelligence, but nevertheless, I want to say that.
Don't do that to yourself, Sarah.
I won't. But nevertheless, I lack the words to be able to articulate what I have that knowing of, that gnosis. With regard to walking different types of labyrinths, the one that I am drawn to is the Chart, the medieval. And that's the one that I have in my backyard as well. And there's different circuits to these labyrinths too. There's, what is there, 7, 9, and 12 different circuits?
For the medieval?
Yes.
Historically, it's 11.
11.
But then, 7, 9, 12.
Well, but then there are the variations. Uh-huh. And so you can do a petite, so-called, which will be a 7. And all you do is lop off the outer 4 circuits. But then there are other variations. In fact, if you look at – there's an offering in the current online – Tat Labyrinth Society online auction, and the cover on that – it's the London Underground exhibition catalog, and it has a very interesting design that's a variation on the medieval. I don't remember the details really, but I was kind of enchanted with it when I first saw it. I had never seen that pattern before, and it's really cool in my opinion. So they're just human the creativity of human intelligence brought to focus on the idea of the labyrinths produces all sorts of variety, and that's what mind does. The function of soul is to distribute the unity that exists at the highest level of the supreme out into all this variegatedness that we experience in the world of manifestation. And it's just beautiful.
Well, I think, too, that there are the purists out there who would say that it's blasphemy to change any of the designs, you know, as with regard to sacred geometry. I want to talk to you a little bit about that before we go to our break, but go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say embrace apostasy. Because if you do, it suggests that you're thinking.
All right, we're going to get back to some more thinking after our break.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network. Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. Om Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business. Join Elliot Jolish, the business therapist, each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Elliot Jolish Hour, as he interviews business experts on your behalf. And you're invited to email your business questions to questions@ecjgroup.com for answers, live, on air, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Elliot Jolish Hour. Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Yeah, I can't believe it. We're like almost at the very end of the show, and I'm thinking, no, I have so many more questions for David. I want to keep talking.
Didn't I tell you we would wish for 3 or 4 more hours?
You know, I think that what I'd like to do is I was working with Gaia MTV about doing a labyrinth series, and I know that you and I had talked about that. You know, I think I'm going to probably see if I can resurrect that. The person that I was working with is no longer with Gaiam, but there's other people there who I think, you know, it's time for more and more people to become involved with this. So you started this nonprofit corporation to bring labyrinth and this group of people. By the way, you know, the people that I connected with at the first Labyrinth gathering that I attended in Taos, New Mexico a few years ago was that I'm still very, very close to them. And next week's guest, Dorit Brouwer.
Yeah,
Brouwer. Is it Brouwer or Brouwer?
Well, that's how I pronounce it.
Brouwer. Yeah, I'm going
to
say Brouwer.
Yeah,
no, Zen Master Ted says it's Brouwer too. So I'm going to have her on next week. But I connected with Lars and Holly and you and all these other people. And my vast listening audience is going, who are these people? And I must know them now. So, tell us about the first gathering that you said, all right, I got to do this. This is my calling. I have to be involved and I still have to feed my family. So,
well, the first gathering, which was not called a gathering, it was called a conference, was in Lindrith, New Mexico. And that was before the Labyrinth Society existed. And that was in September, I believe, 1995. And I really wanted to go to that meeting. But I just didn't have the finances to enable it, and so I didn't go. Well, that's kind of where what I call it, the impregnation of the idea of the Labyrinth Society was kind of a zygote at that point. What's her name? I can't remember it. Terrible. I just can't remember the name of this woman who organized that. And then she did another conference in 96, and at that conference center up on the Hudson River in New York. I just don't remember the name of that place at the moment. And then the year after that, she decided she wasn't going to do it anymore. And I went to that second one. And there were a few of us, actually there were 3 or 4 people in particular, Annette Reynolds, Helen Curry, Robert Ferrey, and I think Joe Magus, who were lamenting over the fact that there wasn't going to be a conference in 1997. And so they got their heads together and put out an announcement to the contact people who they knew that we were going to get together in St. Louis, and Robert Ferrey was going to host it. And so I guess 23 or 24 of us got together. That was in November of 97. And at that meeting, we decided to look into forming a new entity. No name at that point, just kind of look into it. And so 10 or 12 of us agreed to work on that together in the intervening year. We came back with an actual proposal for forming an organization to the follow-up meeting in November of 98, also held in St. Louis. And we decided to proceed and chose the name the Labyrinth Society, elected a board of directors and executive officers, and set about the task of, with a bylaws committee, of forming bylaws, becoming incorporated, navigating IRS not-for-profit status, and so forth. And the first gathering was in Denver. in 1999.
And why did you choose Denver?
Because Robert Furay found it, and it was cheap, and we didn't have any money, and so Robert Furay fronted the money, which after the gathering, and we had made enough money from the gathering, we were able to pay him back. But it wasn't called a gathering then. It was called a conference. So the gathering name originated at the second conference at a board meeting when Sig Lonergan proposed to the board that we no longer call it a conference, but rather adopt the nomenclature gathering. And that the board was divided on that. We took three votes on the motion, and it was tied in each instance. Oh, sorry about that. My phone's ringing.
It's because you're a popular guy.
Right. It's probably a spamming call. And anyway, so if we can kind of talk through that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let's just continue talking through
it. Your guests. So it got to the point where I thought to myself, and I was on the board at that time, so I had a vote. And I decided, this is ridiculous. This is just too contentious and confrontational. So I called the motion a fourth time and changed my vote, and then it passed. And so that's how gathering came in.
Oh, so you were involved with the word conference too?
Actually, now that I think of it, now I'm not trying to promote my ego here, but the fact of the matter is that I was the vote that changed, that then led to. It's kind of like the 13th Amendment. It passed in the House of Representatives by one vote. So sometimes one vote makes a difference.
Absolutely, it does. Absolutely. Well, I know that we've decided to go from the White Light Express Conference to the White Light Express Gathering, and we're only doing those every 5 years now. So, but this isn't about this. We do have an online auction, which, of course, I am the co-facilitator of, the annual auction that we have for the Labyrinth Society, and we've put links to that up there on my Twitter, and it's available if you go to thelabyrinthsociety.org. Now that's because, David, you don't have a website, but your website is thelabyrinthsociety.org. Is that correct?
Yeah, in effect, I would call that, but it's not literally my website. Of course, it's the organization's
website.
I don't have a personal website, no.
I was going to say people will want to know if they can connect with you, perhaps for some reason, what have you. It tends to happen with my guests, you know, people just want to, you know, invite them onto their shows and what have you. So if you want to know more about the Labyrinth Society, it's imperative that people go to thelabyrinthsociety.org. And this is where they will have links to the auction. Now, the auction, it's sort of a long URL, but if you go to Radio Namaste, to the Om Times page or to namaste.com or even to the Labyrinth Society Facebook pages, the auction will be there. And I'm delighted to be a part of this, by the way.
And thank you for taking that on.
It's the one good thing I do every year. It's the one good thing I can say is truly altruistic. It's just, I care about promoting something that is eternal and everlasting. Now, I really enjoyed the fact that you gave us the lowdown of how all the specifics behind all these people that had to get together, create this nonprofit corporation, create the bylaws. And this is passion. This is passion because this isn't just some, you know, gee, I want to create a group of people who come together so we can have this great fraternity and have parties. This is a passionate endeavor. I know these people, a vast majority of the people that you're involved with, including yourself. You are a clear representation of the integrity behind these people. In our pre-interview, the pre-flight check today, we happened to talk very briefly about, you said that there was this woman who continued going to these labyrinth walks. And she never said much. She came in and I'm going to go ahead and let you tell us about that to lead out.
Yeah, this is related in Helen Curry's book, C-U-R-R-Y. And she tells in their stories related to her monthly labyrinth walks in New Canaan, Connecticut. And she always left out a kind of guest book where a person could enter their name, contact information if they wished, and leave a comment. And she remarks in the book that there was this woman who came religiously, faithfully, month after month after month. Never said a word, just came in quietly, walked the labyrinth, and sat for a bit, and then departed. But one night, Helen noticed that she wrote something in the book. And Helen was immediately curious to see what she had written, because this was the first time she had spoken, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so Helen went over and took a look at it, and it's published in the book. That what she wrote was, "Labyrinth people are the nicest and smartest people I've ever met." Now, how she knew that they were smartest without ever speaking to anyone, I don't know, but that's what she wrote.
Well, I think it's because we are actually very well behaved in the fact that we're just a bunch of people who just walk in circles. Hey, David, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to have you come back, because we need to chat some more.
Continuing the conversation would be great.
That would be outstanding, and I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Very happy to be here.
So everyone, that's Labyrinth. Go to the labyrinthsociety.org online. Find out more about the annual gathering. They are a great deal of fun, okay? They're fun. They're not boring in any way, shape, or form. It's very, very relaxed. It's very – and gentle. And you will be welcomed. And for all those people out there who tend to not want to attend a spiritual gathering or a gathering of this sort, you know, with its foundation in something that's a little metaphysical and a little unusual, you will be welcomed, and you will not be, and you will find friends that will last lifetimes. If you believe in that, and if not, it'll definitely help you with regard to this lifetime. Now, don't forget, next week's guest is somebody I actually met at the Labyrinth Society gathering in Taos, New Mexico. The title of her book, Girls Don't Ride Motorbikes, it came from a mantra from Dorit's youth. It was embedded into her mind by her father. She actually did a modern-day pilgrimage. I can't wait to talk about that. See you next week.